To read the prophecies of the Hebrew Bible is to read predictions of miracles that did not happen during the Second Temple period. Predictions that one day Jerusalem would expand far beyond its walls, that Judean desert would bloom, that the Jews of the world would be gathered in, that wonders such as this would shock and inspire the world. Welcome to Jerusalem 365, episode 153, the beginning of the expansion of Jerusalem. I'm Meir Soloveitchik. It is a prominent prediction in the prophecies of the consolation of Zion, the expansion of Jerusalem, a vast, exuberant overcrowding of Israelite multitudes, a spreading of the city beyond its original boundaries. Hence the famous Haftarah featuring the words of consolation in the weeks following the 9th of Av, Isaiah's exultant words, and here I draw largely in translation on the poetry of the King James Version. Sing, O barren, thou that didst not bear, break forth into singing and cry aloud, thou that didst not travail with child. For more are the children of the desolate than the children of the married wife, saith the Lord. Enlarge the place of thy tent, and let them stretch forth the curtains of thy habitations. Spare not, lengthen thy cords, and strengthen thy stakes. For thou shalt break forth on the right hand and on the left, and thy seed shall inherit the nations, and make the desolate cities to be inhabited. Fear not, for thou shalt not be ashamed, neither be thou confounded. For thou shalt not be put to shame. For thou shalt forget the shame of thy youth, and thou shalt not remember the reproach of thy widowhood any more. For thy Maker is thine husband, the Lord of hosts is his name, and thy Redeemer, the Holy One of Israel, the God of the whole earth, shall he be called. And the passage continues a bit later. For a small moment have I forsaken thee, but with great mercies will I gather thee. In a little wrath I hid my face from thee for a moment, but with everlasting kindness will I have mercy on thee, saith the Lord thy Redeemer. This is Isaiah. And then there is Zechariah. I lifted up mine eyes again and looked, and behold, a man with a measuring line in his hand. Then said I, Whither goest thou? And he said unto me, To measure Jerusalem, to see what is the breadth thereof and what is the length thereof. And behold, the angel that talked with me went forth, and another angel went out to meet him and said unto him, Run, speak to this young man, saying, Jerusalem shall be inhabited as towns without walls for the multitude of men and cattle therein. For I, saith the Lord, will be unto her a wall of fire round about, and will be the glory in the midst of her. Ho, ho, come forth and flee from the land of the north, saith the Lord, for I have spread you abroad as the four winds of the heaven, saith the Lord. Deliver thyself, O Zion, that dwellest with the daughter of Babylon. End quote. As Rabbi Yehuda Levi, citing these passages, writes, quote, What is common to the prophecies quoted above is that in the future there will be a new reality in the land as a whole, and in Jerusalem in particular, with a very great increase in population that will bring about a renewal of the city and its expansion beyond its original boundaries. End quote. Today, of course, ladies and gentlemen, that is exactly the situation in Jerusalem and other cities of the Holy Land. And if we wish to look for the beginning of this prophecy's fulfillment, we can look to a series of homes built in the mid-19th century by a British Jew who believed with certainty in the truth of the prophecy and who yearned with hope for a Jewish return. As we mentioned yesterday, Moses Montefiore's Holy Land Relief Fund was bequeathed a large sum of money by the philanthropist Judah Turow of New Orleans. Montefiore ultimately decided to utilize the funds to create a series of homes for the poor outside the walls of the Old City. These domiciles, known as Judah Turow Almshouses, established in Turow's memory, became known as Mishkenot Sha'ananim, drawing on another prediction in Isaiah, that Israel will dwell b'mishkenot miftachim u'b'mnuchot sha'ananot, in secure places of dwelling, and in calm resting places. As histories of the neighborhood and city note, the residents in these homes faced long hardships, given other factors throughout the years. First, the original lack of safety, and later, being near the border of the Jordanian occupation of the Old City after 1948. But the creation by Montefiore of this neighborhood was visionary. Simon Goldhill, in his book on Jerusalem, explains its significance. He writes, quote, The first house outside the walls, it is still standing, had been the summer house of the British consul James Finn in Talbiya, about a mile from the city. A one-story building with just a dining room and a living room, and a balcony facing east. The consulate in those days was a very modest affair, where business was conducted from the front room of Finn's family house. And Bishop Gobat, the second bishop of the Anglican Cathedral, had opened a Protestant school on Mount Zion. But, Goldhill continues, it is Montefiore's construction of Mishkenot Sha'ananim that signals a sea change in attitude to the urban development of Jerusalem. The idea, Goldhill continues, was to create a space outside the cramped and disease-ridden old city where poor Jews could live healthily and earn a living. As was so often the case in Victorian culture, a rule book was produced for the community. The rules were particularly strict on cleanliness, again a typical product of the new fascination with sanitation in London and Paris, where political debates on the disposal of sewage, new sewer systems, and the health of the working classes were hot political topics. Rule 5 specified that each resident had to clean his home every day and spray the floor with water every day. Rule 6 required residents to use the refuse containers. Rule 7 guaranteed that the cisterns would be kept covered. Rule 9 insisted that the synagogue would be cleaned twice a day and water poured on the floor at least once a day. Rule 8, with the proper gesture of memorial, declared that a chapter of the Mishnah, Talmudic law, should be read every day, and the Kaddish Derabanan morning prayer should be said after it, for the soul of the departed benefactor, Judah Turo. The Book of Regulations ended, "Take heed not to transgress the fraternal covenant, so that no conflict and discord shall break out amongst you. Seek the welfare of your brethren wherever you go, and in whatever you do, and you shall dwell safely in your domiciles." Mishkanot Sha'anim, Goldhill continues, was modeled on the idealist communities that were such a feature of Victorian philanthropy and industry, such as Robert Owen's factory housing project at New Lanark, or Bourneville, the new town for Cadbury's workers, where cleanliness, godliness, hard work, and rigorously maintained social order were the principles enforced by the earnest social reformers who founded them, end quote. The site of Mishkanot Sha'anim was marked, then as now, by a windmill. Montefiore, as Abigail Green notes in her biography of the man, had transported all the building material from Jaffa and had intended it to serve as a mill to provide bread for the inhabitants of the neighborhood. The mill never truly fulfilled all that Montefiore hoped from it, but it stands to this day as a symbol of the neighborhood, including the expansion that became known as Yamin Moshe, named for Montefiore. In an interesting article about the area, the tour guides Aviva and Shmuel Bar-Am report how the windmill went through changes, but has today been restored to look almost exactly as it did in Montefiore's time. That, I think, is lovely. And of course, that is not all that has been restored since then. And even if the windmill did not fulfill all of Montefiore's dreams, Montefiore's vision of an expanded Jerusalem has certainly been realized. To read the prophecies of the Hebrew Bible is to read predictions of miracles that did not happen during the Second Temple period. Predictions that one day Jerusalem would expand far beyond its walls, that Judean desert would bloom, that the Jews of the world would be gathered in, that wonders such as this would shock and inspire the world. As century after century passed, the predictions of Isaiah and Zedekiah and other prophets were not realized. This was seen by some as proof that the Jews were rejected by God. This was seen by some as proof that the prophecies would be fulfilled in a different, less literal way. But Jews of faith claim generation after generation that Isaiah's words were to be taken literally. And then suddenly, the most remarkable thing happened. Many of these predictions came true, a vindication of Jewish faith. I knew this in abstract, but did not really appreciate it fully until we marked our daughter's bat mitzvah on Sukkot in the old city of Yerushalayim. My daughter and I spent the months leading up to the event learning all of the prophets together. And as we studied Isaiah in the midst of preparing for the trip, the very words that I had once read when I was 13 in my bar mitzvah haftorah suddenly took on a very different meaning when studied as an adult and when preparing for our trip to Israel. It was difficult to find a place for us to spend Sukkot in Jerusalem because it was so filled. And that, I realized, as we learned together, is as it should be. For Isaiah informs Jerusalem in words that I had read as a bar mitzvah. Si'i saviv einayach u'ri'i kulam nikpitzu ba'ulach. Lift up your eyes and see, all have gathered and come to you. We were fortunate in preparing for the celebration to find a home to rent in the old city. And when we arrived, we could barely make our way through Shar Tzion, Zion Gate, because the traffic, the foot traffic, the crowds were so great. But that too is as it should be, as Isaiah further predicts, Ki chorvotayach v'shomamotayach v'eretz harisuteich, ki ata tetrimi oshev. For thy desolate places and thy land that hath been destroyed will suddenly and surely become too narrow for its many inhabitants. And marking that bat mitzvah, we stood on a Jerusalem rooftop, celebrating our link to our daughter in a place from which I could see both the Temple Mount as well as the Mount of Olives, where three of my four grandparents were buried. I felt the profound link between generations. And another verse from Isaiah spoke to me. Habitu el tzur chutzavtem vel makevet bor chulaltem. Look to the wellsprings from which you come, from whom you were created. Habitu el Avraham avichem vel sarat techulalchem, ki achad kirati v'avracheo v'arbeo. Look to Abraham and Sarah, for God says they were only individuals, but the myriads gathered in the city all come from them. We must look to the past in order to understand the present and ponder the future, to see the prophecies that have already been fulfilled, and therefore to be inspired to look forward to the fulfillment of all the others. We see prophecies of the expansion of Jerusalem realized in our age, and the fulfillment of visions takes place through the actions of visionaries. One of those visionaries was a man who, around 175 years ago, created a small neighborhood beyond the original boundaries of Jerusalem and set the stage for the fulfillment of prophecy to begin. This is Meir Soloveitchik, wishing you a Shabbat Shalom. Looking forward to learning together next week. Signing off.